I'm science fiction writer Robert J. Sawyer, and you're listening to The Shuttle Pod.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another very exciting episode of The Shuttle Pod Podcast. This is Shuttle Pod number 47. Today is Monday, April 9th, and I'm your host, Kaylee Iacovino, and today I'm joined by Matt Wright.
Hey, guys.
And Brian Drew.
Hey, everybody.
And today we have a newsy edition of the podcast. There's been a lot going on in the world of Trek lately. Everything from Discovery, news about season 2, and some interesting tidbits on season 1. Some rumblings about the next Kelvinverse movie. And some news about a CBS and Viacom merger, which is, of course, the parent companies that own the various incarnations of Star Trek television and film franchises. So we're going to break down some of the things that have been happening today and talk about what we know about what's coming in the world of Star Trek. So, guys, lots of stuff going on today.
Indeed.
Yeah, today was a busy day, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, we apologize for not being here last week like we normally would be. We try to make a point of doing the podcast every other week, but a lot of work-related stuff got in the way for a bunch of us. But as it turned out, it might have been for the best, because today we learned that Christopher Pike has been cast for the upcoming season of Discovery, and it's going to be an actor named Anson Mount, who is probably best known for being one of the leads in an AMC series called Hell on Wheels. I have not seen it myself, but apparently he was quite good in it. So,
and he co-starred with Chief O'Brien, Colm Meaney.
Yep.
Colm Meaney.
So there's a good Trek connection there.
Yep. So anyway, exciting news, guys. I mean, we've kind of been expecting this. This is not exactly a huge surprise.
The second they showed the Enterprise, we were pretty sure this was coming, you know?
But yes, it's a big confirmation, because I think we probably talked a lot about this in our when we did our finale episode of Shuttlepod at the Disco. But, you know, they showed the Enterprise, and so there's also speculation of how much more are they going to show us. And we all kind of agreed, I think, that they have to they have to include the Enterprise in the story moving forward. Otherwise, it's like a big fake out.
Yeah.
And that would just be silly. And so are we going to see the bridge? Are we going to see any of the characters? And now we have confirmation that we're going to see the characters, specifically Christopher Pike. So,
yeah.
Yes.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, Pike is obviously has become a major, and has always been a bit of a major character in the Star Trek canon, but even more so, obviously, with the Kelvin movies, more people are aware of him. So,
I think what's cool about Pike in this scenario is that there's not a whole lot about him in canon in terms of, because he's not on screen very much, obviously, and his time, especially during this period, 10 years before the original series, we don't know that much about him. We do know stuff from the Kelvinverse, but that's, you know, a separate universe, and so their paths could be completely different.
Yes, definitely.
So there's actually some room here, I think, to do some interesting stuff.
Indeed. Anson Mount bears a more than passing resemblance to Jeffrey Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
It's a good likeness.
Yeah, it is a good likeness.
Yeah, they did a nice job with that. And he's got the eyes, maybe not quite.
Yeah, they're not quite Jeff Hunter, but they're close.
But there are very few people on the planet that have eyes like that.
Exactly.
If you look up piercing eyes in the dictionary, there's just a picture of Jeffrey Hunter.
Totally right. I have to say, I also like that Anson seems to be really jazzed about this. He immediately went and changed his social media stuff to various Pikes. On like Twitter, he changed it to, you know, the injured Pike from the Menagerie, and on like Facebook, he changed it to a like a Playmates Pike action figure.
Right, Pike action figure.
He's pretty great, and he wrote a nice little statement about how he's super psyched to do it, and that he remembers watching, you know, TOS and syndication at the, you know, ripe old age of 8, and was super, you know, was just super blown away. And so that's really nice to hear, like that he's into it. You know, that's what we want to hear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're glad he's a Trekkie.
Exactly.
Welcome, Anson. Welcome to our crazy world.
Your life will never be the same.
Yeah, nope.
That is true. That is very true. Very true.
I know a lot of people are wondering about other characters of the Enterprise, yes. And there's a big question about Spock.
Obviously,
yeah. Right?
Well, Spock is on the Enterprise during this timeline, during this time frame.
Yeah.
So he's a lieutenant, and he's, you know, just the science officer. He's not second in command yet. He's maybe third at this point. So we really don't have to see Spock necessarily, which is good.
No.
Because the showrunners have said at every point when they've been asked, they've said, we're never going to do it. We're never going to get, at least never in asterisks so far anyway. They don't feel any reason to go recast him. And they've said this repeatedly, so I tend to believe them, but they just don't even want to get into it. And I think that's good.
I'm really curious to see how episode 1, maybe 2 and 3 of the next season goes, because
mm-hmm.
I think it would be hard to... They really wrote themselves into a corner, in my opinion, mm-hmm. by putting the Enterprise in there. Because they're going to have to...
say it.
They shouldn't recast Spock, in my humble opinion. No. I don't think people would feel good about that. I certainly
no,
wouldn't.
No, I don't think so. Yeah,
I agree. So I feel like, and I feel like they think that too. So they're like, we can't recast him, but they're going to have to dance around the fact that they're not showing him. Because he's Michael's brother.
Yep.
Basically.
And Sarek is on Discovery as well.
And Sarek is there. Exactly. Yeah. So how are they going to be like, oh, we're not going to say hi to our son/adopted brother.
Well, so the only thing, as commenters have pointed this out too, is that maybe the good part about this is that currently Sarek and Spock are estranged from each other. So they may not really want to run into each other. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's what about Michael, though?
And Michael's the same thing. Remember, Michael may... We don't know their relationship yet. We don't know how they were treated.
Michael, I guess.
May have been ostracized somewhat, too, because technically she's a human.
It just seems like they're going to have to bring it up. And it's going to be a big...
It's going
to
come up in
dialogue. We had to write this because otherwise everyone would be wondering about it.
Exactly. Yeah. They're going to have to do something with it.
I don't envy their job here is what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're going to write something bad. I'm just saying I have no idea what they could do. So I'm really anxious to see what they decide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the person that we will see recast, they haven't announced it yet, but who knows? It's still plenty of time to announce this. It seems like the next person that's obvious that we would see is number one.
Right. Yeah.
If we're going to do this.
Pike's second in command.
We're going to do this, if we're going to go on the Enterprise, I really want to see number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a character that never got her day.
Exactly. If they're going to do it, let's do it. And we know that, not that Fuller has anything to do, especially with season two at this point, but we know that Fuller was kind of into number one. He liked her as a character. He's said that before. So maybe Harpertz and Berg, who of course were working directly under him, maybe they've sort of taken that on too, and they like the idea too, you know? So that would be nice.
We shall see. It's going to be complicated, though, if they attempt to actually step onto the Enterprise for a variety of reasons, obviously. Yeah.
I have a feeling they're going to at least show the bridge, you know, Pike on the bridge on the viewscreen.
Or part of the bridge, maybe?
Yes.
I don't know if they'll actually build the Enterprise bridge and, actually step onto it.
Because, I don't know about stepping
onto it. Because if you're going to actually be on the Enterprise, then not showing Spock becomes very
hard. Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's more of a background on the view screen kind of thing. That's my guess.
I tend to think so too. I don't think look at the reaction they got just for doing what they did to the redesign of the ship. Imagine if they actually go on it.
I know. Yeah. I agree.
So I think
it's a giant landmine.
Yes, it is. And there's also this little thing hanging out about what the uniforms for this crew should look like.
Yeah,
we have a couple things about that. One is, of course, that the canon but not really canon novels,
that David Mack
kind of hinted at the fact that he knows that yes, they have two different uniform types. The Discovery crew look is different than the Enterprise crew. And the other funny thing is, this could be just a total tease, but we'll see. Is someone actually directly asked Aaron Horowitz about this? At what we'll talk about next, which is the Visionaries panel, but just to sort of say this really quick, he even said, oh yeah, we know, you know, he's very mysteriously goes, well, we know they're over there and we know what kind of uniforms they wear, .. And it's like, oh, okay. So this is a big, you know,
That's talk about sending mixed signals.
Right.
If exactly. Matt, you like triggered my stress reflex. I had blocked out the idea that I was going to have to see a recast Christopher Pike in a Discovery uniform. I don't know if my heart can take that.
So, I mean, honestly, we just don't know. That could be just kind of teasing us, you know, messing with us. It could be that they trot out the previous uniform design that they had. If for folks who don't remember, we talked about this a little bit in our big wrap up of like how season one came together, but there actually was a first version of the uniform under Fuller's designs that we know that we've had described. Obviously no one's really seen it, but we've had described to us by the people working on the show as sort of much closer to what we would expect a uniform to be. And it was in the three colors.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, so for all we know, they have some of those prototypes in storage and they trotted them out.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. I don't know. That's totally, you know, again, totally a guess. We're just guessing here, but maybe they trotted those out for the Enterprise crew.
And then maybe just everyone could just switch to those, you know, I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
A lot of people want that. That's for sure. Yeah.
So we're
gonna get pretty controversial then, because we're probably gonna at least see a hint of the Enterprise bridge behind people. What is that gonna
look like? or they could 3D hologram everyone, if you know they don't have
true,
to view screen
true. That
it.
Does sidestep that you're right that does sidestep that
and then
it?
They could just be like, hey Pikey, come on over to Disco and we'll have tea here.
Very
and
true.
Then they never have to show the interior at all.
Silly me, I forgot about those holograms. You're right, totally. That's the way to sidestep it entirely.
Yeah.
Now,
I'd be shocked if we actually end up on the Enterprise.
Well, right. But then to go back to the fact that Anson Mount was announced, kind of makes me think Pike's going to be reoccurring at least a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So if he's
reoccurring,
you got
to figure at least for the first two or three episodes.
At least, yes, I agree. But I wouldn't use CBS's casting announcements as any indication of character importance.
As we got burned by season one, the hard way. Yeah. Exactly. CBS likes to announce whoever they feel like, regardless of their actual role. You know,
with a varying amount of fanfare that does not correlate to importance in the show.
Correct. Absolutely. So that's the big caveat there is maybe not. Maybe this means nothing and he's in like, you know,
like
the
10
first
minutes.
Two, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It seems like it would be a real messed up though if they announce him and he is only in the first 10 minutes, Kayla.
I would say so.
I agree. It'll probably be. I think they'll hang around with
like
the Enterprise
like
for a couple of episodes.
You know.
Or
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We'll see. But it seems at least like you're going to get, you know, two episodes out of them. So we'll see.
Well, this seems like the perfect opportunity to segue into what Matt already mentioned. This is the Visionaries panel at WonderCon that happened a couple of weeks ago, which is I'm calling this section of our podcast Visionaries panel, aka what we know about season two, because they talked a whole lot about season two.
Mm-hmm.
And we
Without
learned a
saying
lot.
Tons, but they did talk a lot about it.
We learned a lot of little bits and pieces.
Little tiny details, yeah. So to almost backtrack a little, the first thing we learned was that there was actually, and we'd heard rumors of deleted scenes from various episodes for a while, there was what they call a bonus scene, because they want it. It's not deleted. It's bonus because they want this little teaser to count. Like, they want it to be canonical. Like, they want it to count as, like, something that, you know, is part of Discovery, officially, anyway. That's what they say. And that was what was originally a deleted scene from the end of the finale of Season 1 with Emperor Giorgio being recruited into Section 31, which we all... I don't know... I kind of am not surprised by this, mostly because there's this black badge thing that we've all assumed.
Yeah. And we were all correct about
it. They basically canonized. Is it canon now? Or they made it official? Maybe it's not canon because they didn't say it on screen, but they sort of made it official that the black badges were Section 31.
They seem to have, or at least the black badge. So the popular theory is... Because on the face of it, this seems honestly like quite ridiculous. Section 31 should not have insignia because they don't exist, right?
Right,
they don't
I know.
Exist. So a lot of people have said, well, maybe this badge, and again, they can quickly fix this with a few lines of dialogue. Perhaps that badge is actually a secret Starfleet security badge, which is their cover, right? Because Starfleet Security is a real legit organization. So maybe that's her little pass, right? She gets this black badge and that's a little... you know, token that says, well, you get a pass, you know, that's her free pass sort of. And really it means something to Section 31 operatives as well.
But I mean, it could be also cover. Maybe that like this is part of an organization that sort of later secretly becomes Section 31. Like it has its origins in whatever group this is.
But the problem is Section 31 has existed since the founding of Earth Starfleet. That's how long it's existed. So that can't be.
Okay.
That's the problem. I know. See, that's the problem. They made themselves a problem by actually having a badge. That's the thing. So we'll have to see how that turns out. Yeah. It's almost like
they should have someone that's like the keeper of the canon in the writers.
Gee,
room.
It's almost.
Yeah, or yeah.
And they should
maybe they should just listen to them.
I was going
to
say, maybe not ignore that advice as well. Yeah, that's the real question. So what we have is a fella named, we found out his name. He doesn't say his name, of course, like in the clip, but he was there at the panel. The character's name is Leland, and he disguises himself as a Trill with little holographic Trill spots that he then turns off when he finally sort of reveals himself to the Emperor.
In public, by the way.
Yeah, it's in her bar, but it's not very secret now. Because he basically turns off his little spots and then throws a badge at her. And it's like, okay, cool.
And speaks openly about Section 31.
And speaks openly about Section 31, that's correct, yes. So that character is played by Alan Van Sprang, who's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a genre actor on TV. He's been in stuff. Mm-hmm. He's been in all kinds of, like, you know, just random stuff from on the CW. And he was even in the last season of Earth Final Conflict. So there's a loose Roddenberry connection somewhere in there. And he was invited to this panel just to sort of, you know, surprise everyone and go, okay, like, here's my surprise bonus scene. And he didn't have a lot to say because, of course, he's new to the franchise. But what he did say was, oh, yeah, like, Section 31 is going to be a big deal this season. And he is the head of it. He's going to be, like, in at least reoccurring or something, is what he led us to believe. So we don't know what, you know, a lot of Section 31 this season or whatever. We don't know what that means, really, of course.
Right.
But that's what we were told. So that basically finishes season one and directly leads us to season two.
Right. Yeah. That literally, I think, originally was supposed to be the final scene.
Yeah. It was supposed to be this last little.
In the finale.
Right. Like this last little stinger scene, kind of like, you know, a Marvel movie has a bunch of extra little scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's the stage, the after credits.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. It was supposed to be that. And then they changed their minds and decided to hold it to reveal at WonderCon.
As much as I don't really like that the scene itself, I think the idea of doing an after-credit stinger after the finale is kind of cool.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
Because TV shows usually don't do that in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, agreed.
So what else? So. We learned some fast facts about season two. What it's going to be 13 episodes, like season one was originally supposed to have.
Right.
Right. Exactly, yeah. Until they tacked on those final two episodes, which it probably would have been better if they had never done.
Yeah. We've talked about that, too. Go back and listen to our last
podcast. So it's more of they're going to have less of a lift this coming season. It'll only be 13 hours, so.
Yeah, and production on that is supposed to begin later this month, so later in April.
Yeah, it's very soon.
Yeah, the next week or two, I believe. Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be some sort of social media announcement. You know, there'll be a clapboard or something.
Yeah, I think somebody will. Yeah, exactly.
Something like that. I think so.
I wonder if they're going to be as tight as they were during the filming of last season.
That's the question we'd all like to know, because in theory, look, Discovery is a success. Relax a little. Let people who want to tease stuff. Like, it's okay. Nothing's, you know, I mean, remember, they were locking down things like a behind-the-scenes shot of, like a clapboard or, like, even, you know, of somebody, like a director's chair, showing no sets at all.
Right, no
like,
sets, nothing having to do with plot, no characters, no costumes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At one point, something was shown, like, from the flip side of a set, so all you saw was the plywood and a green screen.
Yeah.
And they even freaked out and pulled that.
They made him take it down.
That does no harm. All it does is help, you know, the hype. So hopefully they've kind of gone, okay, we've launched, you know, Discovery successfully, we can allow a little more of this casual kind of, you know, stuff to come out, which would be really great. I would hope they will. We don't know. We'll find out. But I would hope they chill out a little.
They do need to. They need to loosen up a bit.
They do. I hope they chill out a little. Just are okay with a little bit of this stuff.
So I'm curious what you guys.
It's okay.
Yeah. I'm curious what you guys think. If production is beginning in April, what do you think is a likely release date? Because we still don't know when season 2 is going
to
premiere.
So the post on that stuff they were saying took like upwards of 5 months, which is a long time. But I believe that, especially maybe in the beginning. They might be able to tighten it up now, but they were still saying like maybe 5 months of post-production. So, I mean,
but they can still be doing post on, to have all of it in the can when they premiere.
But they would like, they would probably want to have like the first, I don't know, 3 to 5 in the can before they premiere.
In the can.
Yeah. Okay. So that puts it really pretty much late this year, or early next year, just like they've been saying. So we'll see.
I think the show's going to come back in like September, October.
I hope so.
I think the show's going to run almost the exact way it did this for the first season.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. I think it would be good for it.
It might even be a little later, but we'll see.
Maybe. We'll see. I also think they'll break it up.
That might be the right way to do it. Yeah.
Well, for I think they discovered inadvertently discovered a good way to retain people by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think and I think it'd be smart for consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll see.
But I'd be shocked. I don't think we're going to have to wait till 2019.
No, it just seems like a bad idea from their marketing, too. Like, you let a whole year go by, basically, almost, you know, like, without...
Yeah.
So.
And we found out that Alex Kurtzman, who is one of the executive producers and co-creators of the show, is going to direct the season premiere. We don't know if that's going to be an hour or two. You know, we don't know anything like that.
Right,
but...
they don't know what they... Yeah,
and then a fan favorite, Jonathan Frakes, will be back to direct one of the early episodes, maybe like the second or third episode.
Yes, which is cool, very cool. Right off the bat, he was back in.
Yeah, he was at a convention, I guess maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. I forget exactly where, and he said that he didn't actually come out and say, I don't think, that he was directing, but he kind of intimated that he is.
Yeah.
And he also said he had read the first script of the second season and the outline for a second script, and he says that it's on fire.
Yeah,
exactly. I can see him saying that.
Oh, totally, right? You can see it.
He didn't actually quite say it like that, but...
But you can see
him.
You get the idea. You get the idea.
I'm going to imagine that he said it just like that.
So the fact that Frakes has seen these first couple scripts means to me that he's coming right in there to shoot maybe episode 3 or something. So he's seeing what's leading up to it. You know?
Yeah, very early in the season. Yep.
So that's always a good news. That's good news. We like Frakes. We want to see him back.
Mm-hmm.
And here's something that I'm excited to talk about. We know what the theme of season 2 is going to be.
Oh, yes. What is the theme, Kayla?
We do indeed.
Is this actually what they said? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Science versus faith. Science versus faith.
Yeah, okay. Now that's kind of weirdly broad. Harbert's actually has a really great, Aaron Harbert's has a good quote that kind of refines that a little.
So on the Visionaries panel at WonderCon, Aaron Harbert's talked about the theme of season 2 being science versus faith. And here's the exact quote from Aaron.
What is the role of serendipity versus science? You know, is there a story about faith to be told? Leaps of faith. I mean, we're dealing with space. We're dealing with things that can't be explained. And you have a character like Michael Burnham who believes that there is an explanation for everything. So one of the things that we're very interested in is tackling that idea as it sort of rolls out. And it doesn't just mean religion. It means patterns in our lives. It means connections that you just can't explain.
So it's a little vague, like you said, Matt. But in general, it's this serendipity versus science, I guess, was the direct quote. But it's I don't know. I don't want to say worried. That's way too strong of a word. But I'm my curiosity is piqued because I think it's very easy to go overboard when you're pitting serendipity versus science, especially for non-scientists.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mean that in an offensive way. I just mean that I think a lot of people don't think scientifically the way that scientists do.
Right.
And so there's this fundamental idea that some people have, that, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but it, this idea that, that something like serendipity or coincidence or faith or magic, whatever you want to call it, is mutually exclusive to science. And I think scientists see that, feel the opposite way in general, that things that are serendipitous or coincidental or seem magical are just things that we don't understand.
Right.
But science is just a tool we use to understand the universe. So it's not like there's fact and then there's magic, or there's real and make-believe in, you know, in these worlds. It's like there's science, which is a tool that we use to explain what we can explain and try to explain things that we kind of can only partly explain. And then there's everything else, which is the majority of the universe. Like, we only have a very small understanding of the universe. So I'm just, you know, I hope they don't go too overboard with being like, you know, there's just some things that science just can't explain, in the meaning, meaning like there's this other like state of matter, you know what I mean? There's like liquid, solid, gas, and magic, you know. I hope they don't go too far.
I think Arthur C. Clarke said it really well when he said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, which is true, right?
Exactly.
Until you progress, you think it's magical, right? You have a scientific explanation, you might think it's, you know, coincidental or serendipitous or whatever.
And in a way it is, and in a way there's a lot of things in our lives that we deal with that we'll never be able to explain.
Oh, sure.
Using science as a tool. And so, but we still have to deal with those things, you know, like life and death and all these, like, we're never going to understand, or at least we probably won't in our lifetime, what happens to you when you die, you know what I mean? So
right.
we don't, but that, those are things you don't use science to answer. So that would be an interesting thing to explore.
So hopefully that's what he's talking about. And like you said, and not this, let's pit them against each other and make it, you know, this weird mysticism, you know, or something in it all.
Yeah.
That kind of belongs in a different franchise. I don't know which one, but just not ours. You know what I mean? There's the mysticism thing doesn't use, mostly, aside from maybe Vulcan mysticism, doesn't really show up in our franchise. Our franchise is very sort of pseudoscience, you know, at least based, and tries to be somewhat
science-based. It's grounded in its own pseudoscience.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, which is the idea of Vulcan mysticism. Because, you know, obviously Michael is the main, this is revolving around her, it seems, and was raised by Vulcan. So maybe they could play in that aspect of, like, her perspective.
Oh, and she has a little piece of Sarek Katra, speaking of the sort of mysticism side.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really easily explainable.
Right. Something, you know, we can't measure or understand.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there you go. Maybe it's just like that. And we'll explore more of that. I don't know.
Well, that's super interesting, and I'm excited.
Yeah.
Although, I do have to say, and we, again, we talked about this a lot in our sort of wrap-up, not the finale podcast, but our wrap-up podcast of Disco Season 1, about how the what we were told, like, the theme and the themes of Season 1 were going to be didn't play out the way we expected. But, so I'm a little bit apprehensive about this, but I think that Season 2, we're really starting with a clean slate. There's not sort of a mess behind the scenes in terms of people who are running the show and people coming and going. And so I feel like the people in charge now, have a lot more control over how this thing will go.
Yeah. Cause they were left with a really sort of skeleton overview of Season 1 from Fuller that they don't have now. Like you were saying, it's clean, you know, clean slate.
So it's like, we can't really use Season 1 as a blueprint to what to expect come out of Season 2. I think it's kind of a new game, which is fun. True.
Yeah.
They have to come up with an entire premise for this show now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there hasn't been one.
Discovery doesn't have one right now.
Right.
At all.
Right.
It's a story about nothing.
That's Seinfeld, you guys. We can't do that again. No, but I am fairly, like, intrigued and fairly excited, like, cautiously optimistically excited about this to see where this goes.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think one other thing that came out of this that we should... It's nice to make clear, because a lot of people keep thinking there's this hope for Captain Lorca to somehow reappear, like his prime counterpart, or, you know, how he was pulled apart into the mycelial network. Maybe he could reform or whatever, right?
Totally.
Or the prime version of Gabriel Lorca.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the primary thing is they keep thinking maybe prime Lorca will show up, although he was we're pretty sure he's dead too.
He's presumed KIA.
He's presumed.
Yeah, there's enough gray area there where they could probably figure out.
So the nice part is I mean, look, realistically in the real world, we know Jesse Isaacs has moved on. He's got other projects. Like, dude, he's not coming back. At least not anytime soon.
At least not now.
Yeah. It'd be cool if he did, like, if Discovery goes for several seasons, it'd be cool if he came back for, like, a little mini arc in, like, season four.
Sure, exactly. And that's perfect.
Right.
That's perfect for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the showrunners did make it clear that, no, we're not going to see Lorca, that he was, you know, his big arc was season one. And in fact, I like the way they put this. Everyone kind of has a Lorca hangover because they feel kind of beat up and betrayed by him. You know, that he was one thing, appeared to be one thing and then wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so everyone needs, you know, they're trying to give their characters time to sort of recover and move on.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So who will be captain of
the
USS
indeed.
Discovery? Not Saru.
And it's not Saru. Nope.
Yep, apparently not going to be him.
We know that
we'll see more.
We will see more of him, yeah. But he said that, I believe he said that Saru is not ready to be the captain of the Discovery.
Doug Jones has said that.
Doug Jones, yes. Yeah, not Saru. But...
It'd be cool. Let's interview Saru. I don't know how we'd do it, but let's do it.
I don't think that, not that we could get Doug Jones to do an interview with us, but I don't think he would be at all opposed to doing an interview in character. He just seems like that kind of guy.
Oh, I bet he would.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
He'd probably like come with the shoes and be like, have you seen how flat my butt is?
Yeah. Exactly. When I first sat in the chair, it was actually kind of hurt. My butt's so flat, you know?
Yeah, look how flat it is. Just look. Look at it. Look at these shoes.
He's funny. Yeah, totally.
He's a fun guy.
So yeah, the showrunners also did specifically say they would like to tell more into Saru's backstory so that we'll... happen. We will get at least a little bit more this season, which would be good because Saru, of course, has a very interesting, you know, backstory and sort of character. Like, his race is interesting for sure.
He's a fan favorite. So,
yep, and Saru, exactly.
Yep.
So we'll see.
And it sounds like we're going to get to know the supporting bridge crew a bit more.
Yes, which is good. Yay.
Yeah, it's good to make them not complete like zombies. It's nice, you know, at least we don't have to focus too much on them, but it'd be good to get a sense of who they are at least somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice that they've kept the people who are on the bridge pretty consistent. You see the same people sort of in the background.
Yes. Yep.
Which is good.
Yep.
Good.
We're supposed to learn more about this augmented character, right? And how to pronounce your name? Arim?
Arim?
Yeah. Arim.
It's the woman with the like robot parts.
Plastic parts all over.
So that'll be cool. It still drives me nuts that the one character's name is Kayla. At least they spell it wrong. There can only be one.
And I think Harbert's also mentioned that they want to do more character work this coming season.
Yes, which is good.
Because I think that's one of the things the show suffered with.
Yeah. This is one of those things I'm a little shocked by, that it seems like it's news to him that Trek has that and likes that. You know what I mean? Like that actually worries me a little. But I'm glad he got the message now. You know, I'm glad he's got this idea now.
Wow, Star Trek fans really like character-driven stories.
Yes.
Who knew?
Yes,
we thought it was just about explosions.
Yeah. So his direct quote is, "One of the things I'm excited to hear is that the fans are open to more scenes where things have... stopped down," which is industry jargon, "scenes where characters are checking in and where we're learning more about stuff, where the plot isn't necessarily driving the whole thing. I'm proud of all the turns, but I'm glad to know people are interested in these quieter moments. Mix it up. Have a more slice of life flavor." Yes,
nice.
Let's have
I
a
like
little
it.
More slice of life, please, Aaron. We would like
yes,
that.
Yes, let's try that, Aaron.
Yeah. We really would. It would be great.
Slice of life. I like it. Reminds me of that, like, one of the earlier scenes in Beyond, where they were doing like a day in the life.
Yes. Things have become a little bit episodic.
Yes. Yeah. Great quote. Well done.
I love that.
And there was that episode of TNG.
Yeah.
Where
Lower Decks, maybe?
Goes to,
all kinds of
and like, what was it, Data's Day?
Yeah,
Data's Day
is a great
episode.
Yeah, from his point of view. I love that.
You know what I mean? So you get stuff like that. There's several instances of that.
I'm glad that they got the message and that they now feel free to do that. I think, again, being free of this outline that they had to do the Klingon War really kind of felt they felt constricted, and I think now hopefully we'll see what they do on their own. You know, we'll see what they choose to do. So that's good.
So speaking of Beyond and the J.J. Abrams Kelvinverse movies, we have learned a little bit about the next Kelvinverse movie lately.
We have. I think obviously people are aware that Quentin Tarantino came up with a story concept, which he pitched to J.J. Abrams. Mm-hmm. They commissioned a writer's room, and a screenwriter named Mark Smith, who wrote the screenplay for The Revenant, ended up winning this competition in this writer's room, and he's now off somewhere trying to flesh out Tarantino's story concept. Mm-hmm. And we found out that there are one and possibly two other scripts that are floating around for a potential fourth Star Trek film. Patrick McKay and J.D. Payne, who had worked with Bob Orci on what was originally Star Trek Beyond before Bob got let go and the whole project got reconfigured, they apparently have a script.
And this, right, am I right when I say that this was the script that Abrams was hyping up when Beyond came out?
Yeah, this is the one where he couldn't even help himself and hyped a fourth one before Beyond was like
a fourth out. One that didn't even exist. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
Right. Which apparently, that was clearly just a publicity ploy.
Sure. The one with maybe, which theoretically has Chris Hemsworth coming back as George Kirk.
As George Kirk.
Somehow the two Kirks meet. Who knows?
So at the time, it was just PR stunt. But do we know that there's a script being written?
Okay. Yes, we know that because people have actually said so. Like, people interviewed have dropped their names and said that's one of them. And, of course, Tarantino and Smith is the next one. And we've sort of heard that maybe there's a third, but we don't have any idea exactly who that is. It could just be, you know, the movie stars kind of talking and they're not really being specific, you know what I mean? Because we're getting this from actors while they are on press tours for other projects. And honestly, the actors are some of the last to really know what's really going on sort of production-wise, like pre-production. So they kind of know almost as much as we know. I mean, they know a little more than that, but in some ways, they're just reading the same trade articles we are, you know, when people ask them. So it's hard to say. We were pretty sure, I guess we actually were wrong, but we were pretty sure that Simon Pegg and Doug Jung, who wrote Beyond, were maybe doing a third pitch. They were the third group doing a pitch, and I could have sworn we were pretty sure that's what it was. If you guys don't remember, back in December 2016, Simon Pegg even tweeted this little tease of him and Doug sitting in the Bad Robot offices with a little vague little caption to it, and then nothing. Like, of course we've heard nothing because that's very mysterious. He couldn't. Whatever it was in some kind of, pre-production or pitch or something that he can't really publicly say anything about. But I think we all kind of assumed maybe they were the other, writing group with their hat, threw their hat in the ring. And we actually thought that. In fact, so did Zach Quinto. He even thought that. And then a couple of days later, Simon Pegg gave another interview and said, no, Doug and I were never going to write the fourth movie. That was never the deal. Doug and I are doing something together at Bad Robot, which we probably can't talk about just yet. So they got some other production deal going on, apparently.
Right. So
I'm kind of bummed about that. I would like to see what Peck and Jung came up with. They did a good job with Beyond, I thought.
Yeah, they did. They did the most remarkable. I mean, Beyond has got its issues, but the most remarkable thing about it is that they basically wrote that movie as they were shooting it.
Yeah, they scraped that thing together and banged it out.
They wrote that on the fly. Yeah. And it's actually, I mean, Krall could have been. I mean, Krall is the big
problem. That's the big thing, more than anything.
But overall, the movie holds together remarkably well.
Yes. Yeah. To circle back to that lesson that Aaron Harberts apparently just learned, the character moments, the smaller character moments, were right, I think, in that movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we all agree that it felt most like a Star Trek movie of the three Bad Robot movies.
I think so.
It was clear that the writers understood the nuances of the characters, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And that made it work. Yeah. So there were little things that were probably even, some of which were probably even imperceptible, that made it be like, oh, I that's familiar. That's the Bones I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It finally felt like a modern day update of the original series.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was set, I mean, it was excellently set up, I think, by 2009, this 2009 movie. And then we were sort of waiting for it to get there, right? Like, it was set up to, you know, they that's their early years, whatever, they make it onto the Enterprise. So we're waiting for this payoff of, like, when do they become the group of professionals that we all know and love, right? Mm. So.
And speaking of TOS, TV show / early movies, and...
Yes.
And the film franchise. Mm-hmm. Even more news on that front is that there might be some kind of a CBS Viacom merger.
Yes, indeed. That's making big news in the, you know, in the big trade, you know, magazines in Hollywood.
So, mm-hmm. So I know you guys, you know, obviously I follow this stuff as well, but I know you guys are even more into the details on this. Can we set it up for our listeners a bit of, like, what's the deal with CBS and Viacom and Paramount, and why are they different?
Yeah, we should probably backtrack, right, and talk about how they, of course, used to be one company because, hey, we remember when Paramount was everything, right? Paramount made the TV shows, Paramount made the movies. It was all one big happy, what we would call today in the modern sort of cinema landscape, a shared universe. That term wasn't really a term in the 90s. But that's effectively what we had in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And it was quite nice, wasn't it? And then while they're all sort of related companies, they're all sort of, you know, cousins to each other, the sort of cousin companies had quite the falling out, let's say, for various business reasons. And they were split up in at the end of 2005. And that's the kind of it's still confusing to a lot of fans, and I understand why. To this day, is that they're not the same company anymore, but they also both own pieces of Star Trek, which makes it really awkward, right? So CBS split from Viacom. Viacom is the parent company. Well, it used to be the parent company for them all. Like, they all used to be under the Viacom, you know, umbrella. And so Paramount is still under the Viacom umbrella, but CBS is not and hasn't been since 2006, like we said. And so it's kind of weird because CBS basically got the keys to the kingdom. They have every TV property. They have the rights to all the merchandise.
The merchandise is a big one, yeah.
Yeah, and yep. So... And
like
because,
books and novels and comics, yeah, and stuff, I mean, too, right?
Yeah, so anything that uses the Trek, you know, properties at all actually gets okayed by them. And I mean anything. The Kelvin Universe merchandise actually goes through them, too. Because they kind of hold all the keys, right? Because Kirk and Spock were TV people. They were entities on TV first. And then they got turned into movies. So they actually, you know, there's a very complex licensing agreement that no one outside of the CBS and Paramount lawyers know. I mean, no one knows what the details are. It sounds very convoluted, but somehow they're cross-licensed to each other, right? Like, CBS kind of holds all the keys, but Paramount actually owns... they own the movies, right? Like, they have
the motion pictures.
Yeah, they have the celluloid that, like, the motion pictures are on. So they're licensed back the rights to have those characters in the movies that they own. It's very convoluted. So it would be really great to make this a lot less messy and put them all back together under one umbrella.
So what is the news, given all that background? So basically, in a nutshell, right, CBS is TV and all the merch and licensing
and everything else,
and everything
much,
else,
yeah.
And Paramount is films, and then there's some Bad Robot thrown in for good measure. But now there are talks of CBS and Viacom coming back together.
Right.
So what's happening? What's happening on that front? How are the talks going?
So that's one of those things that, if folks remember, that was talked about even back in 2016, and they kind of tiptoed up to the, you know, to the altar, you could say, and then back, you know, runaway bride, you know, right? They ran away from it.
CBS has to be dragged to the altar.
Yes,
basically.
And they're being dragged to the altar, so to speak, to extend the metaphor. A lot of the press is calling it, and I think it kind of makes sense, a shotgun wedding. Because the overall owner, it's still funny, because overall ownership of both of these companies actually still sits with the Redstone family, right? And so it's kind of weird. These companies are separate, yet still have a lot of the same people on the boards, and still, you know, there's a lot of this, like, commingling of who really gets to say what goes on.
Yeah, it's very incestuous.
It's very weird. And so what's happening is the Redstone family, who owns all of this, the whole, you know, giant extended family still, is saying, no, you two, like, get back together. Screw it. Both of you guys need to get back together. And CBS is currently kind of in the upper hand, mostly because they haven't had all the problems that Viacom has with profitability. You know, Paramount's, you know, films have kind of misfired a lot in the last few years. Just stuff like that we all know. I mean, we know how Beyond didn't succeed the way we wanted it to and things like that. So Viacom's had a rough few years, and CBS, on the other hand, has actually had a great few years. So, you know, we got a whole thing where, like Brian said, CBS is being dragged to this altar. They don't really care. They're successful. They're having a real hard time trying to figure out why they would take, like, basically, why would they take their fuck-up cousin back, right? Like, why is this guy going to come live in our house, right? Like, we don't care. We're fine without him.
So what does it mean for Trek if the merger happens?
So if it happens, and this is probably more of a when than an if, but if and when, and when is really important. We can talk about that in a second. But we should stress when, because this is a long, kind of a longer-term thing. Eventually, hooray, they will be under one roof. And hopefully that means we get a sort of more unified Trek universe, kind of like we'd all kind of liked to have, I think. And hopefully that's what that means. I guess eventually that means we can start to figure out if, like, say, Discovery gets on the silver screen, you know, years from now, kind of like we saw what happened with the Next Gen and eventually moved to the big screen, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's, of course, not possible yet, really. But if they're all under one umbrella, sure, maybe that's a possibility. That's all eventuality, though. That's not today, and that's not even, like, a year from now or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the ideal scenario in my mind, personally, would be that, obviously, yes, everything gets reunited, everything's under one roof, and a production office is opened up that is basically Star Trek Productions and has has someone actually running the franchise.
Yes, we need a leader.
Star Trek these days just feels like it aimlessly moves from one thing to the next because there's nothing, there's no cohesion.
It's split.
It's fractured.
Yes.
Yeah, it really is fractured. It is, you know.
Yeah.
Paramount has their agenda, CBS has theirs, and
obviously, I think the thing that is on everyone's mind that we're hoping to see after this merger, Captain Worf movie. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry to anyone who's ever tweeted hashtag we want Worf.
But hopefully this will work out.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking selfishly as a Star Trek fan, and also as someone who does not want to see bad things happen to Paramount Pictures as a longtime film buff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Paramount, when that divorce happened in 2005, when they split them up, Paramount got screwed.
Yes, they did. They really did.
They got all their TV shows, not just Star Trek. They got, like, Paramount had a very lucrative TV business.
Hmm. Yeah, like, yeah. Paramount domestic television.
Yeah, like, Cheers was a huge hit. They had, like,
all of that.
All of that
went to CBS. Why did they let that happen?
Well, that's the way the family was split up. It was all some secret little dealio. Yeah.
It's a backroom deal.
The fact
deal.
That Paramount has actually survived for the past 12 or 13 years is actually pretty remarkable, because
it is.
They really were kind of just nothing but a film studio. In this day and age, you can't just be a film studio anymore.
Wow.
And that's why I think that's why we go back to this is a question of not so much if, but a when, because mega mergers, you know, mega media conglomerates are everywhere now. So these guys really do need to merge. Though. Yeah, I know it's not.
Yeah.
But for them to stay alive, they really do need to merge back together.
Yes, they have to compete. Need it. They both need it.
Yeah.
Hmm. Paramount needs it more than CBS right now, but CBS is ultimately going to need it too.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They ultimately do need each other.
And Moonves knows this. Les Moonves knows this.
Sure. He's just in the upper hand, and boy, is he using it right now, the negotiating table.
Yeah, he's exerting. Yeah, they were playing games over the past couple of days when it came to bidding.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Undervaluing or whatever.
Apparently CBS submitted a bid that Viacom considers way below market value, and they want CBS to bring the bid up, and CBS refuses.
Right.
And if I was CBS, that's kind of the way I would play it.
Yeah. The other big bone of contention is who, so that Les Moonves, because he's the successful, you know, of the successful family member, basically, he gets to run the merged company. That's not really in question, but what's in question is, well, who's number two, right? Like, who gets to, who's his right-hand man? And of course, this is the other bone of contention, is Les wants his current right-hand man, and Viacom goes, well, yeah, but where's our guy?
Like,
where's our people? And they want their current, you know, number one to be his number two. And you know, there's all this, which seems reasonable. I mean, at least as from an outsider, that seems reasonable. But they just, you know, CBS kind of has this no confidence in the leadership of Viacom. So they're like, no, we want our entire leadership, like, moved over and just plopped down running Viacom.
Well, then Viacom gets nothing, it seems.
Right. So. And so that's why there's all this pushback of like, no, you have to let, like, our guy be your number two. Then this is ridiculous. You know, this is ridiculous. Like, yada, yada.
Yeah. So there's a lot of bickering. That's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be a matter of just when, not if. At this, they really do need each other. And it really makes sense for them to be back merged together at some point.
So what does this mean then for, like, the upcoming Kelvin films? Because that's something that's in production now.
So that's what we...
It's being pre-production. Kinda,
right. So that's what we kind of want to stress about this merger, is mergers of giant companies, they take forever. They're not quick.
Yeah, it would take at least a year.
Yeah, and realistically, you don't, like, turn around from, like, their timelines of things, at least for 2 to 4, right? Like, companies don't merge. They have to go through government approvals, you know, then once that's approved, like, you actually have to somehow merge these organizations again. Like, this, like, the positions, this, you know, like, who's what and what's where, and their facilities, like, who goes where, you know, like, all these assets come back together. It's not really quick. And in the meantime, neither of these companies can just, like, press pause, right? Discovery needs to be produced and keep on going. Likewise, Paramount has their own, you know, slate of movies and a schedule, you know, of movies to do. So they're not going to, like, just, you know, wait. Right. They can't. It would be bad business to just wait.
Agreed.
So basically, there's no repercussions in terms of the scheduling.
I don't think so, no. I mean, because what we're talking about is 2 to 4 years out before they'd really be merged again. And we'd see this hopefully unified, you know, Star Trek office, like Brian was saying. Star Trek production office that exists.
Yeah.
So. It'll be a while. It sucks. I think we all want it to go back and we want it all to kind of cohesively come together quickly, but it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, if they're in 2 to 4 years, if they're all merged and happy and looking to hire 3 or 4 plucky Star Trek podcasters,
right?
They know where to look. Yeah.
They know where to find us. Yeah. Yep.
Well, we'll just be over here, Les. Mr. Moonves.
Yeah, we'll be here if you need us, Les. Yeah.
Mr. Moonves, yeah. I don't think anybody gets to call him Les, I'll tell you.
Oh, Lessie.
Yeah, so it should be interesting. I hope it happens.
Yeah, I really hope so too.
It sounds like it's a pretty sure thing.
I think it's an eventuality, but boy, do they like to, you know, push back on each other a lot. This is at least the second, maybe third go-around of them kind of dancing around the idea. So we'll see.
Well, they either merge with each other or they're going to have to merge with somebody else.
That's right.
They simply will not, neither of these things will survive on their own forever.
In fact, just as we were starting to record this podcast, another little bit of news came out that Viacom had a little flirtation with another company to hopefully buy them, and they were rejected. So it really does seem like Viacom and CBS, they're being pushed together. You know, like, that's the circumstances are saying, you guys need to come back together.
Well, good for us.
So, right.
Yeah, so it should be good for Trekkies.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed, guys.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I think we kind of hit all the big news of the last couple months, really. And all of it is just little tidbits, looking forward to what's going to come next. What's going to come next in season 2 of Star Trek Discovery? What's going to come next in the Kelvinverse? And maybe a few years down the line, those two things won't be as separate as they are now. And we can have one big Happy Trek family.
Aw.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
I think Gene Roddenberry would like that. Would like it that way. All right, well, I think that's it for us, guys. So thanks for sticking around. And as always, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.